Welcome to the Baseball America Rule 5 Draft Podcast. And let me say, this feels like the largest holiday type in the Baseball America calendar. For those of you who are watching this on video, you can see JJ's remarkable giddiness in the post Rule 5 draft world. 13 players were selected in the major league portion of the Rule 5 draft. 55 went in the minor league phase. And we are going to talk about it. JJ, you were there. And so I will just jump right in and start with you. What were your reactions from this year's Rule 5 draft? Just kind of general takeaways before we kind of pick things apart here.
Apologies to everyone. I'm not well lit. I don't know, my audio's not the best. I'm at the convention center here, so the lighting's not the greatest. The internet's not the greatest. All that, but that's what the great thing is I'm here. I was at the Rule 5 draft for what I believe is the 18th time. Amazingly to say, I'm privileged that I've been at 18 Rule 5 drafts. Something that probably not many people say that sentence, but no, I would say the overall takeaways. Okay, I'll start with the selfish one. Jeff and I really do. There is this routine we have now, which is the morning of the Rule 5 draft. Jeff will send me a message and he'll say, "JJ, I'm feeling really good about this year. I think this is the year we do it." Because Jeff and I really do. Our goal is that we write up every player picked in the Rule 5 draft before the draft happens, right? And that is, having shared that goal with people in baseball, they often look at me like, "Are you insane?" Because this is not your major league regular, first year player draft where it's like, "Oh, we're hoping to have written up everyone in the top five rounds." It's like, well, that's a pretty quantifiable group, right? You're going to clearly write up everyone in the top first round, the first five rounds, because those are the guys that are the top players in the draft. This is an eye of the beholder draft, the Isle of Misfit Toys. Everyone available in this draft has a reason that they were left unprotected. And then the players who were picked also have reasons that they were taken. But so we were rolling along and we're going RJ Pettit, Jedson Páez, Griff McGarry, Daniel Susak, Carter Baumler. And Jeff and I are like, "Yes, we're just rolling through this, every one of these guys." And then Ryan Watson was taken. And you could just like, do, 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 wow. Because we missed that one. And that was one that I'm like, we missed. I'm kind of like, when we get to picks that surprised me, that was one that maybe surprised me a little bit. And then we got to the Roddy Munoz pick. And that's the one where I just throw up my hands and say, Roddy Munoz was on a 40-man roster, was then waived, designated for assignment by the Cardinals, claimed by the Reds, then designated for assignment by the Reds, got through waivers, signed as a minor leaguer contract with the Reds, and then was picked by the Astros a couple days, he was just signed a couple days ago. It's hard to even know that he was eligible because he just signed. But also, if you really liked him, why didn't you just claim him and you would have had him on your 40-man before? That's the part, that's the one that I really struggled with. So from that point, that surprised me, a little bit. But at the same time, I felt like, as is often the case in Rule 5, I'll kick it to you, Jeff, but like, I kind of like some of the guys who went at the very end of the major league phase of the Rule 5 draft a lot. Those were kind of some of the names that I was most interested in.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with the Munoz pick. And with a guy that has, I mean, he wasn't even a prospect. So I think even among players that we would have looked at, like those guys rarely get taken that, are above their limits. I mean, he has almost 100 major league innings.
He was a starter for the Marlins for a year.
He had like 80 innings or whatever that year, only had 11 this year with the Cardinals. But like, yeah, it's one of those where it's like you really can't guess that one. Like if we had hit the other 12 picks, I think I would have hit it. I would have considered it 100% just because
Spencer
that was
Miles
such.
is the one that hurts.
Yeah, I
Because we
think
had
like.
talked about Spencer Miles. I had talked to people about Spencer Miles this week. I should have written them up. That's on me.
Well, and I felt the same way about Cade Winquest, where like I had him based on some of our initial studies. And then it was like, it's a double A starter, doesn't strike out a lot of guys. The swing strike rate is below average. He's got three different breaking balls, but it's a curveball that's like his dominant swing and miss pitch. It just didn't seem like somebody that would necessarily get picked. I don't think he's necessarily someone that's going to stick either. It's just hard. The Yankees are just a team where it's really hard to stick on that 26-man roster when you have little to no upper level experience and, you know, aren't an absolute stuffed demon. I think sometimes those guys can overperform despite, you know, a lack of upper level experience.
We did see a couple of pitchers, three pitchers actually start off the draft, but then the fourth pick, Daniel Susak, was a catcher. Before I ask you guys anything about your favorites or surprises from today, what is the success rate, generally speaking, among offensive players in the Rule 5 draft? It seems like a tougher niche to nail in this model.
I'll start with saying that's the only position player taken. Now, Ian Kundle did a great job for us recently of doing a piece that kind of laid out just how pitching heavy the Rule 5 draft has gotten. But even by Rule 5 draft standards, a one position player Rule 5 draft is kind of like head exploding crazy, because we've actually seen like the success rate. I would say that I'm actually going to call it up right now. And to give just a couple of examples. So last year, Liam Hicks, the catcher, stuck. Now, he was one of three position players taken last year, four, and he was the one who stuck. The year before that, Nassim Nunez stuck, and then Devinson De Los Santos was picked but didn't stick. So we only had two, and one stuck. Ryan Nota stuck and was useful. Blake Sable stuck the year before as an outfielder. So I would say that we are now in the world of usually seeing one to two to three players, position players taken. But when you ask about those sticking, Akil Baddoo stuck in 2020, there's often been a guy who stuck. The thing that's been interesting about this, and I kind of want to see what Jeff thinks about this, we are seeing catchers taken more often now. It used to be that you didn't see catchers taken, because if you're going to be a catcher taken, you better be able to be a backup. You don't have to be the starter. But teams don't say, oh, that's fine, we're going to carry this catcher, he'll be our third catcher all year, and we'll just kind of handcuff ourselves and say that we have to have three catchers on the roster all year. You have to be someone who the team is comfortable saying, yep, you're our backup. That means you're going to play 150, 200 plate appearances at the minimum. I do think, though, that Daniel Susak, Jeff, is one who could kind of fit that, as could probably check that box. And if I look at the Giants step chart, I think he's got a pretty good chance to stick right now.
Yeah, and I listed him as a guy that I thought was, you know, among the five most likely players from the Rule 5 draft to stick. And I think because, like, he has a decent amount of upper level experience here, the questions on his hitting profile aren't necessarily the power or the bats of ball ability. It's really swing decisions. You know, he's overly aggressive, and I think that's fixable. And that's fixable even in a few weeks to an off season. I think just in terms of, you know, making swing decisions, et cetera, he's not going to be pressed into playing every day, but probably could play some first base, fill in at catcher. And I think like that's another part of it. You either need to be able to at least provide quality major league at bats, but also you know some versatility defensively, being able to maybe play a couple different positions, which I think certainly helps Liam Hicks. So if they do carry three catchers, you have maybe more versatility as like a bench bat, you know, or a DH fill in first base. And I think Susak probably fits that. So gets more opportunity with the Giants, and stays in the Bay Area, I guess. Kind of went away for a year.
Jeff, did you have any other favorites from this major league phase?
Yeah, I mean, as far as favorites and the players that I think will obviously stick, I liked RJ Pettit a lot. He was a guy that, you know, kind of in our initial process of just looking at all the benchmarks in terms of performance, you know, ERA and FIP and strikeout rate and ground ball rate and walk rate and all that sort of stuff, which is pretty sticky with Rule 5 draft picks, and then kind of, you know, blending in all of the advanced pitch metrics and data, et cetera, that we had. He just seemed like a really certain player to stick. get picked and then potentially stick. He's got a bunch of upper level experience, and the experience that he had in AAA, which isn't always easy to pitch in. They're dealing with a challenge system there. I think the balls are a little juicier. It just seems like everything plays up a little bit in AAA as far as the hitting goes. 274 ERA, backed by a 319 FIP, 318 xFIP, and a 51% ground ball rate while he was getting strikeouts as well. Two different fastball shapes, you know, sinker to get the ground ball, slider to get some ground balls as well, mix and change up. It's an interesting mix. I think he probably sticks, and it's also the Rockies where, if I'm not mistaken, they have a pretty good history with their Rule 5 draft picks sticking, and that's probably because that 26-man roster is a little thinner than some other big league teams. But I thought that was a good one, especially considering he's a ground ball guy. Some of the good underlying traits, maybe this is a little bit of, you know, Paul DePodesta's initial impact. I think that's the right direction for them to go with like sinker ball, ground ball kind of contact guys. The other one I like, and I don't think this comes as a shock to anybody who's read my content over the last several years here at Baseball America, but Griff McGarry. I love the stuff.
If you had not, Jeff, I would have done a check of as an alien taking over Jeff's body.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those. I've always been a fan. It you know, was out in the wilderness in terms of the command, which is a story of Griff McGarry's career as an amateur and a professional. But he did really seem to turn a corner last year. And at different points in the year, early and even late, I was getting a lot of good feedback from a variety of, you know, outside sources outside the Phillies organization. We thought there was some potential he'd get picked last year. And I can tell you, I've had some conversations since the Rule 5 draft that there were a few teams behind them as well that were interested in making that pick. So I also think it's, you know, kind of a statement about what, you know, Paul Taboni is going to be going after with the Nationals, going after a guy with huge stuff. You know, so that obviously was going to be one that I was going to call out because I've been a big Griff McGarry fan for a while. And I think the time is here, you know, forever faithful.
If I can throw in mine, so I'm going to go. So Jeff highlighted the first pick in the Major League Rule 5, RJ Pettit. I'm going to highlight the last pick because the White Sox also took Alexander Alberto. Now, it is very possible that he shows up to spring training. He has five horrendous outings and then he just gets sent back. It's entirely possible. Let's just lay that out. It is also possible that he shows up to spring training and his first two or three outings are so electric that like White Sox beat writers are writing the story of who is Alexander Alberto and how did they manage to land him? Because it is, I would say, Jeff, that this is the best pure stuff that was taken in the Rule 5 draft. It's a 100 mile an hour cut fastball with extension. There is a little bit, I had a team official, you know, from another team say to me, it's like, it's a little bit like a poor man's Emmanuel Class A. You know, I hate to use that name now because I'm just talking on the mound here. You know, just on the mound, specifying that. But like
poor man's might actually be a good instance. Like you want the poor man.
Yeah. Yes. But Emmanuel Class A kind of like level of a guy who throws this 100-mile-an-hour pitch with cut and then can locate it. Well, you can kind of stop right there. Like I know you, Jeff, you run him up for our preview and you kind of said like, well, he's got the slider, but it's really the 100-mile-an-hour cut fastball. That's kind of the story here. But if you have a 100-mile-an-hour cut fastball, that can be your story. You don't need a whole lot else because you can locate that pitch in the zone. It's a pitch that you can throw for strikes that even if you're like, I'm looking for the cutter here, you're not getting good contact if you make contact with it much. That's a pitch that if you said, again, especially going to the White Sox, that's a pitcher going to a team where if I'm the White Sox, I am 100% like, look, you tell him you have not pitched in AA or AAA yet, and we're asking you to go to the majors. We know that there will be a few outings this year, hopefully only a few, where it's going to be a disaster. That's okay. This is a guy, not that you're looking to stash him, because again, I don't think stashing a player and saying, well, he's going to have a 9 ERA this year, but then down the road, it'll work. That doesn't really work that often in the Rule 5 draft. But if you said this is a guy who on his good nights is mows through, you know, an inning where it's like, wow, that was three up, three down, great. And then has some rough edges to him because he hasn't really, he barely, as you kind of detailed in our preview, he doesn't even have a lot of Class A experience yet. But the arm itself is really interesting. That I would say is that's one that really jumps out to me. Another one I'll throw out there is the Guardians took Peyton Paulette. It's weird to say this, that now I just said that the White Sox added this guy, and now I'm saying a guy that the White Sox decided not to protect. But Peyton Paulette also has, I think, more, like if you're trying to say which of the pitchers who were taken have, there's a lot of pitchers who were taken that we'll probably get into some of the picks that we don't like as much that are described as like, yeah, he's fine. You know, like he throws strikes, he's in the zone, but it's not really, it's, you're really probably talking about kind of that lower leverage guy, the sixth guy in a bullpen. Peyton Paulette has the stuff that if he's healthy, if he's throwing strikes and doing all these things, his results have not always matched his stuff in the minors, which maybe that's part of why the White Sox left him unprotected. But pure stuff-wise, he's a guy who could be in a little bit of a higher leverage role. So those are two later picks in the Major League World 5 draft that I thought both kind of stood out.
Yeah, and we can almost transition now to like some of the picks that we liked a little bit less. But the funny thing with me with the White Sox is they make two picks in the Rule 5 draft. They're the only team to do so. They pick two players that have not pitched in Double A or like or above. They pick two guys that have had high experience, and I don't know. There's something about that that is just inherently risky, especially when you lose a guy like Peyton Paulette, who I think has some upper minors experience, has pretty good stuff. I would have probably at least kept one of those guys, you know. It seemed I was a little shocked to see, to see two picks by the same team where, you know, both of those guys lack high minors experience. And I think just historically, there's very few players that have stuck that haven't pitched a Double A for, you know, even an inning.
Holiday season is upon us, and if you're still searching for gifts, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, so every gift feels special and thoughtfully chosen, like the MLB Perfect Catch coaster set, which can turn any table into a home run display. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone and every occasion. From moms and dads to kids and teens, from birthdays to the holidays to anniversaries, you'll find unforgettable gifts that are anything but ordinary. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Every purchase is a chance to choose something remarkable and feel good about where your money goes. With every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
You guys wrote in our write-ups of each of the picks that Paulette might be an easy plug-and-play option for a team looking for upside arms in the bullpen. Seems like a description that the Chicago White Sox might be after, so that is certainly interesting. This can cut both ways, but were there picks that surprised you guys? And I guess that could be for good or bad. Again, just to remind everybody, you guys went 10 for 13 in the preview in terms of having guys on our final 87 players who were selected in the Major League phase.
We went 9 for 13. I'm really embarrassed to say now that is an unacceptable number. We promise we will do better next year.
There you go. There you have it. You can put it in quotes, bookmark this. JJ, of those four players, maybe any of them surprised you? Any of the guys who were in the nine surprise you?
So, okay. We already talked about Munoz a little bit. I'm surprised by Munoz because that's a player that if you liked him, there seemed like that there were better ways to acquire him. Like, you know, if you could, again, I know that the Reds were, on claiming priority probably at, well, no, that would have been right around the same area. But the Astros, he went through waivers. The Astros could have claimed him, added him to their 40, not had to pay the $100,000, and then kind of done the, also tried to do the DFA roulette down the road where you say, we designate him for assignment. Let's see if he gets through waivers. Oh, okay, now we sign him to minor league deal. So that one surprised me a little bit because of that. The other one, and again, this probably goes into my picks I was less enamored by. I'll throw out, I think we're going to have the same ones. So, like, I'll throw out Ryan Watson. And it's not that Ryan Watson may not stick. It's just, like, that Ryan Watson, like, it's kind of, I don't see a ton of upside there. I think he's more of kind of, he's a 28-year-old who's kind of, what he is what he is. The challenge with these Rule 5 pick relievers is, to me, is if you take a guy who you're really, when you're comparing him, it's not, is this guy a big league caliber arm? It's, is he a big league caliber arm that you're willing to have in a non-optionable environment? Because most of the guys of this caliber, the reason that you have them is they're in AAA, they come up, they pitch for a while, they get tired, or you need another arm up, you send them down, you send them back up. It's harder to clear that bar if you're the non-optionable arm. Usually teams want their non-option arms to be, we don't care if Edwin Diaz has options left or not. He's Edwin Diaz. We're never optioning it. We don't care if our setup man, you know, who's pitching high leverage innings, doesn't have options. The lower you are on the pecking order, the more they want you to have options. Anytime you're a Rule 5 pick, you do not have options. So that was one to me. But Jeff, the other one I was going to say along the same lines is Cade Winquist. But I wonder, maybe you think the same or maybe you don't.
Yeah, and I mentioned that earlier, that I thought there was just a very low likelihood that Winquist was going to stick, particularly with the Yankees. It just, and he doesn't have like outrageous stuff. Like I said, three different breaking balls. He commands all three of them really, really well. The curveball is the kind of the chase pitch where there's this, you know, sweeper and, you know, cutter slider that, you know, he can land in the zone consistently, really miss a pretty low percentage of bats. So yeah, I just don't know how this is going to work if they have some sort of game plan on that. Winquist was one. I think any of them that weren't in the preview, we were surprised by, like Munoz, we talked about, Winquist, we talked about a little bit. I know JJ was
Miles. I will say that I know he's only thrown 15 innings in pro ball, but Spencer Miles at least has stuff, and he was good in the AFL. I should have written him up.
Yeah, I still feel like the Spencer Miles thing, though, it's 14.2 professional innings. He's under 15. Guys have had more innings than that in a week in the minors. You know,
in laying out, I just pointed out, like, he's literally never had a 3-month stretch as a pro where he's been healthy for 3 straight months.
Yeah, and I'm going to throw the other one out there, and we were all over this as a potential pick, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I like the pick. And he was someone who's traded to the Rangers, and Carter Ballmer. He's barely pitched in his professional career, had a really nice stretch in AA to end the season this year. And he has good stuff. So that's, and there was pedigree. There's no question on that side of the narrative, but this guy has never pitched on back-to-back days. And even beyond that, I think it's maybe like 4 days of rest is like his minimum. That's tricky to keep on a 26-man roster, particularly on a team that I would imagine has some designs on being competitive in the AL West this year. How they use him, perhaps the stuff is bigger, perhaps he's turned a corner and he feels as if he can pitch on a more regular basis this year. We've seen stranger things happen. That one, despite how it may look on paper, I think is kind of an iffy pick and very risky to stick, just simply because if you can't pitch on back-to-back days, how frequently do you see guys like that stick in major league bullpens for a full season?
Carter Baumler may be somebody to keep an eye on getting returned to his previous organization. I'm going to ask him, it's a perfect transition, who else among the 13 maybe are at risk of not sticking? And then on the flip side, who are the best candidates to stay where they've been selected? JJ, you can go first on this one.
I do think that if RJ Pettit, to me, like if I was ranking it, I feel like that I would be kind of, RJ Pettit is better than some of the pitchers who were in the Rockies bullpen last year. I know that we're early in the offseason, but like that's one where I just look at it and say, okay, is RJ Pettit the best reliever in baseball? No, of course not. He was a Rule 5 eligible pick. Is he good enough to fit in the Rockies' pen next year? He has upper-level minor league experience. He has a track record of success. He has stuff. Yes, just put him in and say, great, this is part of us trying to rebuild. To me, he's the slam dunk one of all of these. I do actually think that I think actually the crazy other one is I think Zach McCambly, I'm not saying it's, I would say for a good, for being picked by a good team, the Phillies are a playoff contending team, but I wouldn't be stunned to see him. And again, I'll kick it to you for a minute, Jacob, because you are our Marlins. You run up our Marlins list. Do you think like this is a guy who has a chance? Again, I bring up the options thing I brought up before. I could see where they look at it and say, he's been fine. We have better guys. And so he gets offered back or he gets put, you know, on waiver, designated for assignment, which means that other teams could claim him, which is how Mike Vassell ended up. Maybe then the White Sox swoop in and go, great, we'll take Carter Baum, because that's how the White Sox got Mike Vassell that way. That was a Rays draft who then was offered back. White Sox claimed him, got 2+ WAR of him. But could you see McCambly as a guy who could stick?
I struggle to see it, especially with the destination that he ended up at. I think that if it was with a Rockies or a White Sox, it would make a lot more sense for him to hang around the big league club. But we're not exactly talking about somebody who has outstanding stuff and limited track record or some of the characteristics of guys that maybe have a chance to explode after they get moved up to the big leagues. It is reasonably modest. He was successful last year, 2.9 ERA and 3.32 ERA and 40-plus innings in AAA. But again, this is it's a low to mid-90s fastball up to 97, limited carry. He's got a fine slider. It just seems like somebody who profiles to be at the back of a bullpen like the Phillies. But could he get claimed by somebody else and stick in the big leagues? Yeah, possibly. I just don't know that he's in the perfect destination to make it work immediately. Jeff? What about you? Anybody?
Yeah, and I think the reason, so I didn't have, I ended up writing this article up. It's going to be up on the site probably as you're listening to this podcast. So I ranked the top five for me. Pettit, agree with JJ that he was number one. And I think he's just the most likely to stick. I had Griff McGarry behind that. I think similarly, a bad Nationals team, there's going to be a lot of moves. This is a move that they made, a player that they went after. I think there's just a higher likelihood that he could stick, and they're just going to be more willing to maybe deal with some of the rough patches that you would deal with McGarry. Susak was the next one that I mentioned. We talked a little bit about him. I just think the catcher track record is getting better. The fact that he can hit and, you know, fill in at a valuable position. And while the defense isn't great, it's not like he's a 30 back there. I think it's passable enough to sort of be, you know, the bat first guy in a platoon, like a Tyler Flowers or somebody like that, that we've seen over the years. I think Ryan Watson, the fact that Watson was picked and then traded for, and we kind of heard some rumors that the Red Sox were going to be trading up or trying to trade for a pick. They obviously targeted this guy, whether we missed on him or not. And, you know, I think looking at the stuff, he throws hard. The slider's pretty good. He got some ground balls, but not at like an outrageous rate. He gets swings and misses, but not at an outrageous rate. There's something with the Red Sox that they identify something with Watson that they believe that they can accentuate and maybe turn him into a better version of what we've seen previously. So that will be interesting to follow. I just think the precedent of a player being traded for, you know, immediately in the Rule 5 draft is pretty good in terms of those guys sticking. And Mike Vassell, a Justin Slayton, who was another player who was taken by the Mets and then traded to the Red Sox following. Another guy I'm going to kick over to Jacob on is Matt Pushard from the Marlins, the other Marlins pitcher who was picked. I think he has a really good chance to stick, particularly with the Cardinals team that's in flux right now. And a lot of the players that are, you know, have major league experience at this point are all on the trade block. So I think there's going to be plenty of opportunity there for him to stick with the Cardinals as well, and has upper minors experience and pretty good stuff.
I mean, you pretty much covered it right there. It's decent stuff. He's 27 years old. It's upper minors experience, was effective enough last year, missed his bats. Just looking here in 62 and a third innings, fastball produced a 34% miss rate, 42% chase rate. He's got a sweeper. He's got a curveball. There's a changeup in there. There's a cutter. So, yeah, I mean, I can see him sticking around a bullpen that might need some help. JJ, any final thoughts on the major league side? And Jeff, I guess the same for you. And then I want to talk minor league side. We'll really get into the
I want to get to the minor league side because I've got to get to the airport. So let's jump to the minor league side.
Do it. JJ, you are very excited about one pick in particular. I'll let you take the full bit here. Introduce your guy.
Yeah, so there are a couple of names. I mean, you know, Hedbert Perez was a prominent prospect in the Brewers system at one point. You know, there were some names, Carson Taylor, when I heard his name, Justin Armbruster. You know, there were some names like, oh, he went. Xavier Warren. But the one that really jumped out to me was when Cole Phillips went. So Cole Phillips, the Brewers selected him from the Mariners. And if you don't remember who Cole Phillips is, that is an understandable thing. And again, I am not making light of Cole Phillips has battled arm injuries. So he went into the draft coming off of an elbow injury. Second round pick of the Braves. So he missed time because of that. Then when he tried to come back, it didn't take. He had to have another elbow surgery. And from what I understand, and I've now confirmed this with multiple sources, the expectation is he may not be able to pitch next year either as he comes back from these injuries. So this is a minor league Rule 5 pick who was drafted in 2022. And if you ask, we talked about the 14.2 innings for Spencer Miles. That gets you into the major league phase. Cole Phillips has zero innings of professional experience. He has been on a roster for 4 years, and he has been on the injured list for every single day of his professional career. And as we said, he's likely to be on the IL for the vast majority, if not the entirety of next year as well. That is a fascinating Rule 5 pick. We did have a guy in the major league phase also, Justin Campbell, who was a Guardians pick from Oklahoma State, two-way guy. He has yet to pitch. He was Rule 5 eligible, and he has yet to pitch a pitch either, but he didn't get picked in the major league phase. So Cole Phillips is the award. I did have someone text me. He's like, is that the first time we've ever had a player taken the Rule 5 draft who's never thrown a pro pitch? And it's like, I don't know on the answer on that one. But that one was obviously very notable. Now, if healthy, this was a premium arm. But I will say that when you say if healthy here, that is a really big if. This is not something where it's the case of, oh, we saw him good. There is no seeing him good right now.
All right. Well, wrapping it up. This is it, boys. Jeff, we're going to go to you first. Any overarching final thoughts that you want to get out here before we close the book on this?
No, it was a blast working on it again. I think the team did a great job. We didn't get 100%, so we kick it back down to 2026 to finally nail it. But I thought getting better and better each year. I'm going to say 9 for 12 because I'm not counting that Munoz pick. There was no way we were pulling that one out.
Right. So. You're right. That one we were not getting. The others we could have gotten. We could have gotten Spencer Miles. We could have gotten Cade. We could have gotten Ryan Watson. Those were possible. Munoz, we weren't going to get. If that had been the only one, I'd have been like, hey, that's as good as we're going to be able to do. Because, again, he signed this bad. Like, I'm sorry, guys, but. As we're crazy, we are absurdly interested in this, but there's a limit, and that limit does end at, hey, we don't have the minor league transactions yet, but if we look at every player who is a free agent, maybe we could click on a page and see if he would sign or whatever. We're not going to go that far. We have a limit, even us. But yeah, so that, yeah, 9 of 12. I like that. 9 of 12 is the way we should put it.
Well, if you want to support us, go ahead.
I was going to give my little wrap up is that we talked about earlier that Jeff is right. When he looks at catchers and we see like whether he sticks, there haven't been many catchers picked, but since 2013 of the catchers who've been selected, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of 7 have stuck. And the seventh who didn't stick, Connor Joe, really was kind of like that's a catcher in the third catcher who plays DH and outfield and first base. He could catch, but he was drafted knowing there was no chance that he was going to even be a backup catcher. So you can really say that every catcher who's been taken since 2013 has stuck. Now, I will say Liam Hicks was the first of those to produce positive WAR. So whether it's in their career, So rather, it's a good idea to take those guys who stuck. A lot of times they stuck for the year, and then that was kind of it. So Oscar Hernandez, Adrian Nieto, guys like that. But, you know, Stuart Kerner. Luis Torrens actually is one who did. Luis Torrens was a pick and then has been a solid player after years more in the minors. But that's something. But it is fascinating that we are now in the all pitcher all the time. And really all right-handers. Like the Major League Rule 5 draft now is which right-handed pitcher do you like? Which one do you like? Which one do you like? And then that one catcher pops up. It's like, oh, okay, that breaks the streak here. But that was it. Everything else is, you know, you could really could be summarized as RHRP or RHS/RP. Because they're all either right-handed relievers or they're right-handers who have started and will go to basically spring training where maybe they can be a swing man, maybe they can be a fill-in starter. I don't think any of these guys are going. We don't really see Shane Smith last year was the real exception. You don't really see a lot of these guys jump just into a rotation. That'd be a pretty bad rotation for a team to be like the rule. Like maybe they get to it eventually, Tyler Wells, guys like that. But even usually in those cases, Garrett Whitlock did it for a little while where he started too. But usually they start as relievers and then move to the rotation.
It's pretty simple, folks. You can't find this kind of stuff anywhere else. And if you want to support JJ's lunacy, head on over to baseballamerica.com. We've got lots of great content over there. Breaking down the Rule 5 draft. We've got prospect handbook stuff on the way. So baseballamerica.com, go to our YouTube page, like and subscribe over there and do all the good things that come with that kind of content. For Jeff Ponce and JJ Cooper, I'm Jacob Rudner, and we will see you next time.